Hey there, it's Frank Buckley. Today on the podcast, it's the security threat we're facing in this nation, one that became painfully clear on January 6th, when some of our fellow Americans stormed the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to stop the certification of the Electoral College victory of Joe Biden over Donald Trump. They were not successful, but the insurrection revealed just how deluded some of our fellow citizens are. Some of them clearly believe the lie that President Trump and some of his supporters repeatedly told and continue to tell that the election was stolen, that there was widespread fraud. They refuse to believe the dozens of court rulings that proved there was no such fraud. They refuse to believe former Attorney General William Barr, who declared the Justice Department had uncovered no evidence of fraud that would overturn the election results. They refuse to believe elected leaders like Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who said Joe Biden won the election. While an ABC News Washington Post poll showed only 8% of Americans approved of the tactics of the deluded, another poll showed nearly three-quarters of Republicans falsely believe there was indeed widespread election fraud. So where does that leave us as a nation? If many of our fellow Americans believe the election was a fraud, is the insurrection that happened on January 6th just the beginning? Federal law enforcement agencies are warning that domestic extremists were emboldened by the violent rioting that took over our nation's capital on January 6th. So what can we expect in the days and weeks ahead? My guest on the podcast has some insight into that question. Frank Vigluzzi is a former assistant director for counterintelligence for the FBI and a former chief inspector for the Bureau. He's also a national security contributor to NBC News and MSNBC. And now, he's the author of a new book, The FBI Way, Inside the Bureau's Code of Excellence. Frank, thanks for joining us. Thanks for everything you're doing in a career of public service with the FBI.
Thank you for having me, Frank. I only wish that I wasn't in demand because we happen to be in a national crisis.
We are indeed. The FBI has been battered by President Trump and his supporters for 4 years now. I want to get to your feelings about that, how your book speaks to the FBI that you know in just a few moments. But first, let's talk about that national crisis that you just mentioned, the urgent matter of security in our nation's capital in the wake of the insurrection. Are you concerned that there will be more attempts to bring violence to our government?
Well, when I watch what's happening, not only playing out on social media feeds, including public and private postings by extremist groups and violent individuals, and I combine it with what we see openly with FBI bulletins warning all law enforcement that there are threats to their state houses and capitals in each and every state, and we see the level of planning and resources around the inauguration in D.C., the equivalent of an army that could defeat Iraq, for example, the same numbers having been used, I can tell you that there is a viable threat and that we have a perilous period to get through in this country.
We're learning that the Capitol Police were warned ahead of the insurrection that this was being planned. It was not a spontaneous event. Some say the FBI didn't do enough to warn law enforcement agencies ahead of the insurrection. Do you agree with that assessment?
We have some hard questions that demand answers. And what I've been saying about the insurrection publicly is that this is not so much an intelligence failure as it is a failure to act upon available intelligence. So, you know, we often, after such crises, ask ourselves, who knew what when? I think we need to be asking ourselves, why didn't you act upon what you already knew? And so we've heard some positive things through multiple media outlets. The FBI has acknowledged that it did, in fact, disrupt the travel of well over a dozen current domestic terrorism subjects who would have led more of the insurrection. My sources tell me it could have been even worse had those people traveled, but we've also learned that they shared their intelligence with Capitol Police, with the Joint Terrorism Task Forces in the Capitol region, and yet we still fail to see the action. But I'm not, as a former FBI official, I'm not entirely buying the story that we shared the intel and the concerns, and they didn't take action to demand more of a security response. While the FBI doesn't physically protect buildings, it certainly protects our democracy And we need answers as to why they didn't force the issue and whether people at even higher levels may have dictated a strategy that enabled and facilitated the breach of security at the Capitol.
Well, to that point, there has been some reporting that suggests, and these are just allegations at the moment, that members of Congress and or their staffs somehow gave some advanced knowledge, gave some tours to some of the people who would the next day or days later attack the Capitol, and that they had detailed knowledge of some of the spaces in that Capitol. Are we going to find out that members of Congress or their staffs are somehow complicit in this insurrection?
This is why, Frank, we need a completely independent commission to look at this, because if you have a House and Senate combined commission, we may actually see people complicit in the insurrection sitting on the investigative body. We cannot have that. But I know the reports of which you speak, and I believe we're going to find out that people inside that building gave people detailed plans and even escorted tours to show them where their targets were. If you watch the videos, and more videos are coming out from inside that building, you see people who knew where they were going and knew where their targets were.
What are the implications of that when you were an assistant director and you had this kind of knowledge? Is this the sort of thing that you could put forward in a criminal complaint? Is this a chargeable insurrection?
Well, there's no question that as we speak, the FBI is rounding up literally hundreds of Americans identified as playing a significant role in the violence at the Capitol. And they're being arrested on the most serious charges they can launch right now. And we're also told that superseding grand jury indictments may be on the way to even more serious charges, including sedition. And don't be surprised if they take what we call an enterprise approach to the prosecution, meaning groups and organizations and structures and leaders being charged with actually organizing this, planning it on a group level. This could be an opportunity to take down an entire violent extremist group as a domestic terrorism organization.
We have also learned in the days since the insurrection that a number of the people who were either arrested or who are seen on the video, seen in the photos, that they were on a terror watch list of some sort. If that information was not put forward, to your point earlier about the communication of intelligence product to policymakers, that was something that we thought was fixed post 9/11. Is that still a problem in our government?
Frank, I think this is what I would call a teachable moment for all of us about what the watch list is and what the watch list isn't. So the watch list is not the no-fly list. The watch list doesn't keep you off airplanes. It certainly doesn't keep you off buses, trains, cars, because, of course, the government has no way to know that you've gotten in a car, bus, or train. So don't think the watch list is some magical wand that can prevent bad things from happening. It's a tracking mechanism if you cross a port, border, airport, seaport. And even then, it simply puts you into secondary inspection. And theoretically, even then, if the search of your luggage is clean and there's no plans or designs for violence, you're likely going to be allowed to travel. So we have to understand that the concept that every one of the thousands and tens of thousands of international terrorists and violent jihadists that are also on watch lists and no-fly lists, that's not some magical panacea. We don't have everyone under surveillance at all times. I don't think Americans want to see that. So we've got to understand what that is and what the investigative tools are that are available. I'm a proponent, and I've been loud about this, that the FBI does not possess the investigative tools on the domestic terrorism side that they possess to prevent terrorism on the international terrorism side.
Mm. To the point that you mentioned earlier about the extremists that are in this country, we know that amongst that group there are many white supremacists. Can you speak to how big of a threat that is to our nation?
So first, I think we're going to find that the group that pulled this off and got inside and enacted violent plans at the insurrection is not a monolith. By that I mean the domestic terrorist and extremist threat is not only one type of ideology. There are those who simply want civil war, and anarchy. There are those that come at it from a white supremacist background and ideology. There are those who want to overturn a government, and et cetera, et cetera. But there's no question from reports that I'm hearing and getting that many, many people inside that building possessed, for example, white supremacist tattoos on their body. We saw symbols of Norse mythology, which has been adapted by white supremacists. So tattoos of Thor's hammer, for example, as a symbol of white supremacists. We saw T-shirts with anti-Semitic celebrations of Auschwitz, for example. So there is no question that, in part, some of this extremist movement is driven by race-based, hate-based domestic terrorism. And we need only look to some recent testimony by the FBI director on Capitol Hill last year, where he said the number one threat facing the FBI is domestic terrorism, and the subset within that group is hate-based terrorism.
And it seems like a section of that is this conspiracy group, QAnon. We now have at least a couple of members of Congress who are sympathetic with it, if not completely believing in some of the sort of crazy conspiracy theories that come out of this organization. How concerned should we be about QAnon?
Well, QAnon brings up the even larger question of the degree to which this movement was fueled by social media and falsehoods, some perpetuated by the far right media and even the president of the United States. QAnon is almost an entirely online phenomenon. And don't be remiss in thinking that the coronavirus and isolation put people in front of their computer screens increasingly with no human interaction other than this violent extremist echo chamber that they live in. And so as a security professional, I both applaud and worry about taking down and censoring these sites and pushing these extremists into even farther into darker and darker corners and recesses of the web where law enforcement cannot see them, where they feel isolated and alone, and where all they hear is an amplified extremist voice such as theirs.
All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Frank Figluzzi about President Trump and the Russia investigation and whether the FBI was right to investigate.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
They've destroyed the lives of people that were great people, that are still great people. Their lives have been destroyed by scum.
President Trump hammering the FBI, as he has done for 4 years now. We're here with Frank Figluzzi, former assistant director of the FBI, head of the Bureau's counterintelligence division, and author of The FBI Way. Frank, I'm not going to ask you to relitigate the Russia investigation or Robert Mueller's investigation, but when Donald Trump and his supporters say it was all a hoax or a lie and the investigations proved that, what do you say?
The first thing I respond with when someone brings that angle up is I ask them one question. Have they read volume one of the special counsel inquiry? If they've read it, they've learned that, among other things, the president's campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was actually considered an operative of the Russian intelligence service. And he took on as his deputy at the campaign a known Russian intelligence officer. I then asked them if they think that the Mueller report was somehow biased or partisan. Have they read the report of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is controlled by a Republican chairman, which goes even further and says that Paul Manafort was working for the Russian intelligence service? I asked them if they remember that 2 dozen Russians have been indicted for messing with our election, for hacking into the Democratic National Committee. And 12 of those indictments are against card-carrying known Russian intelligence service officers from the military intelligence service.
The fact that you mentioned Paul Manafort, Michael Flynn, the national security advisor, those two men alone have been convicted, and then they were pardoned by this president. Flynn lying to FBI investigators. How hurtful is that? How damaging is that to our country?
Well, the politicizing of our justice system, our Justice Department, and even our court system is perhaps among the most disturbing part of the last 4 years for me and for where I come from. You can't mess with the Justice Department and justice system and think that you're not doing lasting damage to the rule of law and the Constitution. So to recap, Michael Flynn has admitted in open court his guilt in lying to the FBI. And for those who think that this was some kind of setup for Michael Flynn, let's remember that the FBI had opened a counterintelligence case on Flynn to determine whether the brand new incoming national security advisor to the United States could be trusted with the usual top secret briefings that you give a national security advisor because of his previous engagements, including paid events from Russia and his secrecy around his meetings and calls with the Russian ambassador to the United States. And indeed, when they asked him about it, he did not pass the test. He lied about his contact with the Russian ambassador. He admitted it in court, and he is guilty of that. The fact that he has been pardoned, the fact that Roger Stone, who likely, according to the special counsel, was the go-between between the campaign and WikiLeaks, this is further damaging to our institutions.
Let's talk about the FBI as an institution and the great men and women who work for the FBI. In your book, The FBI Way, Inside the Bureau's Code of Excellence, you introduce us to these people who come to public service, who give their lives, as you did, 25 years of your life in service of our nation for the FBI. They don't do it for the money, that's for sure. And when they hear about the attacks against this institution, they are doing everything they can to do things the right way. How has this affected the rank and file of the FBI?
So I would be less than truthful if I said this had no impact on morale of the men and women of the Bureau. But far more importantly, since they keep their head down and do their jobs every day to protect America, and I've dedicated the book, The FBI Way, to the men and women, the rank and file of the FBI, let's talk about even greater damage. And by that, I mean the FBI lives and dies. Its success of its mission depends upon it, the public perception, its credibility. There's an entire chapter in the book where I go through the seven C's of value-based leadership for all leaders. One of the C's, one of the chapters, is credibility. And if the FBI begins to lack credibility, and it has with much of the population, when an FBI agent flashes their credentials at a citizen's door and asks for help right now on a breaking case, and that citizen has to pause for a moment because the president of the United States has damaged the effectiveness of the organization, we've got a problem as a nation. Now, it's not to say, as I address in my book, that the FBI leadership is not fully without blame. And Jim Comey and people like Pete Strzok do not fare well in my book because of the judgment that they exhibited. But they handed the president an excuse for going after the agency that he knew was investigating him.
And just so people know who James Comey is, Peter Strzok, a senior agent, a supervisory agent who was involved in the Russia investigation, who sent emails with Lisa Page, who was a counsel for the FBI, and ultimately was fired for his for letting his personal feelings into this. Do you believe, though, that Strzok or Page, in any way that affected their work product?
So the Inspector General of Department of Justice, a neutral career professional, came in and looked at this very issue, Frank, and his conclusion was that the case was properly opened with valid predication. The case was worked without bias or partisanship that impacted the findings, and then it was properly turned over to the special counsel another neutral body that led to dozens and dozens of indictments, including of people around the president.
I want to go into your book for a moment, The FBI Way, and talk to you about a section that really struck me. You talked about getting dropped into very difficult situations where there was a grave threat, and then looking around and seeing how civilians like myself are going about our daily lives unaware of that threat. But it gave you comfort. Tell me why.
So that had great meaning to me, and I included it for that reason in the book. And specifically, it was when I was placed in charge of the anthrax murder scene in Boca Raton, Florida. And I would drive to that site every day, the largest hazardous materials crime scene in the history of the FBI, an unprecedented challenge for us. And I would drive to that Boca Raton site, and I would see people on vacation, dropping kids off at work, going for their morning run, totally unaware of the threat in the building down the street filled with microscopic anthrax spores. And that is my life in counterintelligence. No one understands the full threat of external intelligence services operating in the United States and the full terrorism threat. But that's why we have an FBI. So you don't have to worry every day about what the FBI worries about. And one of the reasons for all the anxiety over the past 4 years in our society is because this has been playing out on television. Who would have thought that I would be on television explaining the Russian intelligence threat to our nation, asking a question about whether the president is somehow co-opted by a Russian service? Now everyone's learning about the threat, and I feel that that's a sad time in our history because the FBI usually takes care of business without you knowing it.
You wrote a letter to the head of the New Haven section of the FBI, the agent in charge, when you were 11 years old, and said you wanted to become an FBI agent. You ended up with a 25-year career with the FBI, rising to the very top, just one step below director. Is there something that we should take from that, your story, your personal story of someone who rose to the top within the FBI, who didn't have a quote in to the FBI?
So first, I've lived that out in my career because I'll never forget that the head of an FBI field office in Connecticut responded to an 11-year-old boy asking about how to become an agent. And so throughout my career, I always stop and talk to young people who are interested in public service. And I remind them that the FBI is not another job or career. It's a vocation. It's a calling. That's number one. Number two, I'm encouraged by the fact that the FBI tells me that their recruitment is very strong right now. That means that young people, like I was, are still interested in saying, sign me up for that, even with the bashing the Bureau has had. Even with the denigration and firing of senior officials, young people today are still saying, I want to be a part of an organization that stands for justice and stands for the rule of law. And I find that very encouraging.
Well, Frank Figluzzi, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm grateful for your service to our nation in doing everything you could to protect us over your 25 years in the Bureau. Thank you very much, sir.
I'm glad we could do it. Thanks, Frank.
You bet. Once again, Frank Figluzzi's book is The FBI Way, Inside the Bureau's Code of Excellence. You can find that on Amazon or wherever you buy books. If you'd like to see my conversation with Frank Figluzzi, we posted it on YouTube. Just search for Frank Buckley Interviews, Frank Figluzzi. If you have some feedback on today's conversation, I'd love to see it. Tag me on social media at Frank Buckley TV on Twitter and on Instagram. We drop a new podcast every Wednesday, and we air our TV shows every weekend on KTLA. We're back to Sundays at 4:30 in the afternoon and just after midnight on Sunday night. And then that show airs again the following Saturday morning at 5:30 in the morning. Thanks for joining us this week, and until next time, I'll see you on TV.